you had three things to do: food, firewood, and sleep, and, you know, water, of course. And so it was very simple. You knew exactly what you were going to do when you got up. You were going to go look for food and look for firewood. And then you were going to cook your food, and then you were going to chop your firewood. You know, it was like very, very, very simple.
No music, no podcasts, no audiobooks, no journal, no pen, no books, no radio, no shelter, no camera crew, no conversation. Just you in the Arctic alone. Welcome to the Safe Haven, a space for stories to be shared about the lights and darks, highs and lows of life. The History Channel's show, Alone, follows a group of contestants as they explore an area of the world. In season 7, the most extreme challenge yet was the Arctic for 100 days. The stakes were high this season, with $1 million as the prize for the winner. Out of 10 contestants, 2 were women, and one of those women was from Ontario, Canada. I got excited about this, and sitting on the couch watching the show, I told my partner that I was going to have this woman on my podcast. And here we are. Kylan made it to day 80 on her quest to 100 days alone in the Arctic, and I am thrilled to honor Kylan and her experience with my 100th episode. So fitting. Kai, all of a sudden, you're signed up to take a challenge of a lifetime, 100 days in the Arctic. How did this even happen?
It kind of happened really quickly and sporadically, actually. My husband, Dave, he applied a few years back. We had some friends who won season 4, Jim and Ted Baird. We were friends with them, and so that was the first time we'd ever watched the show. And Dave got sparked and just thought, like, I would like to challenge myself like that and do that kind of quest. And I was just like, yeah, have fun with that. And he applied, and he didn't even really tell me that he did apply, because the initial application is really just an email. And he didn't hear back until casting for season 7, which was in the spring of 2019. Mm-hmm. We had just finished our expedition season, and, you know, I guess the casting directors kind of go on Facebook, go on Instagram, that kind of thing, and they noticed that it was like a husband-wife team, and they said, oh, like, can your wife apply as well? Would she be interested? And so I just did. I was like, okay, yeah, like, not really taking it seriously. And we had to do some video of us kind of in the field doing stuff. And they said they wanted to, like, you should build a shelter and that kind of thing. And I was not putting in very much effort, because I was just like, well, whatever, like, it's just kind of a fun thing and I'm not really super serious about it. And then we both got called to the boot camp, which is the top 20 or 22 or 3 people that were selected. And so we got flown to New York, and I was just like, sweet, free vacation. Like, we haven't been on vacation in years. And so again, I was sort of just playing along, just being there. And then something like changed when I was like doing some of the interviews with the people, and I was like, actually, this could be a really good opportunity for me to challenge myself and kind of stretch myself and just remember what it was like to be an individual again, because Dave and I have been working together. You know, we work together, we play together, we live together. Like, it's just basically every waking minute we're together and not waking. Mm-hmm. You know, before I met Dave, I was, you know, a fairly independent person and kind of marched to the beat of my own drum, and just wanted to re-remember that I can be a strong individual. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so anyways, I think because there was less women that applied than men. And so I just think they wanted both Dave and I but it would just be weird for the filming if it was like husband and wife compete against each other. And and just for our business too, like we couldn't both of us go away for undetermined amount of time to, yeah, just let our business kind of sit there stagnant. So they chose me to go on, and yeah, it was getting ready ever since, you know, like right after. I think we found out in late June. So we had July and August to get ready, and then just took off.
So was there ever any point in that, having made the decision, it's like, okay, holy shit, like I'm going, I'm going to be alone in the Arctic. Was there any point between then and being ready to go in September that you were hesitant, that you thought like, nah, I don't know about this?
Oh yeah. All the time. Like as it got closer and closer, I was just like, oh, I'd be in tears. Like just being like, I'm afraid. I think my biggest fear was just fear of failure, because you just don't know. You have no idea what it's going to be like, because you've never done this, right? Like, yes, I've done, you know, little solos here and there, and but like never have I just taken, you know, the basic tools and just go and survive. Like it's just, I'm always well provisioned on our expeditions. And so yeah, there was many nights where I was just like, I don't know, I'm so like, I'm scared. And I think the biggest fear was the fear of the unknown and not knowing. Like you want to think you're going to do well, but yeah, you just have no idea. And I was afraid of like leaving Dave and the business, because like right now, you know, it's September, I'd be leaving like right now, and the business is, you know, ramping up for the winter. And so I was nervous to leave him all by himself, you know, to run the show. And I know how busy it is. So while I was out there, you know, I'm counting, I'm like, oh, today is November 18th and he's doing a presentation at the symposium. And, you know, I know how he hates presenting. And, you know, here I am having this amazing experience and he's there prepping for a presentation. And so all of that was in my head while I was out there.
When it comes time to go, it's like, it's go time. What was the thing that pushed you? Like that final thing, it's like, I've got this, I can do this.
I think it was just like a calmness that was, I never once was just like, oh, I'm going to, you know, make it to 100 days. And a lot of the people, like the participants, we all got really close and every one of them were just like, Kai, you're going to crush it. Like you know, winter, like you've got this. And my response to them was just, we'll see. You know, like I never once was like, oh yeah, like for sure, I'm gonna crush it. So it was always just this like, well, we're just gonna go moment by moment, day by day. And all of a sudden it's day 80 and I'm out of food and fat on my body. And that was enough for me. And yeah, that the moment I think was just like, my God, when Dave dropped me off at the airport and I had to physically walk away from him, like I literally felt a piece of me had just been torn out. I'd never felt that tearing. Like it really was like, I was petrified. And, you know, it was when I got to Yellowknife and met all of the other participants there. It was just like, okay, like this is happening. And now it's just put your game face on and no more fear.
And I think at that time too, you were still in September. So even though it's cold, it's not what was coming, you know? So it would have been such a different experience if you had have arrived and it was already December and it was that harsh, brutal thing to just enter, going from home to that nasty weather that we saw, or that you totally first-handedly experienced, but everyone else in the warmth of their little house, you know, with their couch to sit on watching you. It was such an experience. And I think that the emotion that you expressed and that you talked through was where I felt most connected to you, because you wear your heart on your sleeve. You talked about being a person that needs to be touched or to touch and to be with other people and to connect that way. And oh my gosh, did I resonate with so much of what you said on that. And as the days ticked by, I just kept thinking like, oh my gosh, as independent, same as you just said earlier, as independent as I am and as much as I can crush on my own, being alone alone?
Yeah, like you can't text your best friend or your mom or your, you know, husband or your partner. Like it's, there's, yeah, you and the camera. And that's, I think, why they captured so many of my thoughts and philosophies and just deep thoughts, because I was just like, this camera is my Wilson. Like I, you know, in some ways, I think it actually helped me versus not having a camera. Like if you were just alone and not trying to convey your story to you and to production, like it was in my best interest to have the camera rolling. And yes, I probably captured more emotion than some people maybe, but also like that is a part of who I am. And that's probably why they chose me to go on the show, because I cried in the production interview. So they're like, okay, check. She is okay with showing her emotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But that relatability was so important.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's what people have said. Like I've been getting so many amazing emails and messages from handwritten letters. Like it's been overwhelming, the people that just by showing just a fraction of my story, you know, in the way that they chose to edit it, had touched people. And that, that's really nice, you know. I appreciate that, because at first when the show started airing, you would get like tagged on Facebook or whatever, and you'd click on the tag and you thought it started off as like something really positive, and then you'd get people being like, oh, she just cries all the time, like stop crying. Like you knew what you were getting into. And so at first I was just like really hurt that people would see me crying and just think I'm just like a weak baby that doesn't belong there. And then I stopped looking. I stopped clicking on any of the tags. So, you know, it's just better to protect yourself like that. But once the show finished, I mean, I haven't gotten, you know, a single negative thing. It's all just been like people reaching out saying that they've, you know, you've proven that you can be like a sensitive person, but still be strong. Like, you know, it's okay to have emotions. You just have to make sure that you check your emotions and carry on.
That was the neatest part about the fact that the 10 of you had gone out in different places around the Arctic planning for 100 days. When it was down to the final three, I was over the moon about the fact that two of the three participants were women.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I obviously every single participant's story is different and everyone has their own logic of when is time. And a lot of people went out with injury and illness, and you just can't mess with those types of things, right? Like it could have happened to any one of us. And, you know, so there's definitely luck involved in sort of in certain things, like whether you're the one that slips and cracks your knee. And I'm sure every single one of us had a fall that was just like, oh, like I've got to be more careful. And, but yeah, I think the women, and if you look at the statistics of the whole Alone show in all of the seven seasons, if you divide the number of days between number of women and number of men, that the women have outlasted the men proportionately. And so I'm not exactly sure what it is, but maybe it is that need to do it for someone else. Like you're doing, you know, like for me, a huge motivation for me was doing it for my family. And I'm not sure. I've got no idea. I don't know why, but there's something there that seems like women can maybe just last a little bit longer in the grand scheme of things. But also, to be fair, women's metabolisms, you know, often are slightly slower. We need less, like, you know, typically we're smaller people, so we need less calories. So, you know, there's that as well, I'm sure.
I'm interested in knowing a little bit more about your mindset and what actually pulled you through, because there were days that we thought even into the 30s and into the 40s with how you were, because you communicated so well. And that's what I think I appreciated the most was that, like you said, when you were talking to your camera or your Wilson, you really talked out how you were feeling in the moment. And that was so helpful for me as a viewer to really connect with how you were feeling emotionally. So with a mindset, I see it like a chart, like just the fluctuations in how your mindset would be. How did you try and maintain a balance out in the wilderness alone?
I think the main principles that I was running on were like the basis of stoicism, where it's your perception, your action, and then your will. And for me, it was, there was always some good that you could find in every situation, whether it was to learn a new skill, to try something different, to see the good and the bad, and just never giving up and trying new things. And so if I was getting down, you know, there's a number of reasons to get down. Like, for example, you come upon a snare and the snare's been broken. So you know that a rabbit's in your, you know, caught in your snare, has twisted all around and broken the snare. And so now your food is hopping around with a gold necklace on his neck. And it's like heartbreaking, right? Mm-hmm. Like you haven't had food and, you know, you haven't gotten a fresh rabbit in 2 days and you're starting to run low on food and you come upon this and you're just like, it's terrible, like heartbreaking. And then you come out of it by sitting in a blueberry patch. And I called it my blueberry therapy, because you would just go sit, clear your mind, you know, get some calories in you, and then just reset your traps and, you know, set 10 more snares. And I don't know, like, you know, another thing that was really hard for me was the smoke in my shelter. Yes. In my opinion, like, of all of the things, they downplayed that smoke. Like, it looked bad on TV, but it was worse than it looked. Mm-hmm. There were nights where I couldn't close my eyes because they were burning so badly when I would close my eyes. And then the next day I would be blind. And then my sinuses for probably a month afterwards were so sensitive to touch. Like, it felt like the worst allergies that you could possibly have. And like, I just basically couldn't breathe out of my nose. Thankfully, my lungs feel just fine, but my back is like crippled because I would have to sit in my shelter basically at fire level because the smoke would just linger. And I tried everything. Like, I would say they downplayed how bad the smoke was, but they also downplayed how many different things I tried to improve it. And I just don't understand what was going on there. And that was something where I was like, if this does not get better, like, I have to tap, because my health is going to be really jeopardized. But I don't know, the mental part of it was definitely a challenge. And I just always tried to change my perception of just about like how bad things are, because, you know, when you think about survivors of war and starvation, and people, you know, are dealing with so many worse off things than I was, that I really tried to put it in perspective to just be like, this isn't so bad. Think about prisoners of war that, you know, are away for 12 years and like, mm-hmm. or like people lost at sea and that kind of thing. You know, I tried to just like think about people that were worse off than me and just realize, oh, actually I'm doing pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Something that also, it brought me to tears was the gratitude. There's a moment. And so you and I were actually originally supposed to record a couple weeks ago, and it was before mm-hmm. the last episode. And oh my mm-hmm. gosh, am I glad that we waited, because it was the episode after we'd made that decision that you caught those fish and we're like skipping around yeah. on the ice and jumping around the screen of the TV. And I was bawling because I was so happy for you. And your reaction was a combination of, holy shit, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. My gratitude is literally exploding out of my eyeballs. It was just everything in one. It was such a beautiful moment.
Yeah, it was November 12th. Will it forever be my fishy squishy day? Like I just, every day, every November 12th, I'm going to have a fish feast because yeah, that was like the best moment of my life, you know, like apart from my wedding day and maybe a few others, like that was like the, I think they did me justice there with the fish dance, but to give it a little bit more context, you know, they made it look like it was okay. The ice is in, I'm on the ice, I catch my fish, but it wasn't, it was 6 days of fishing before I caught that fish. Mm-hmm. And so I was already like, this is my chance. And then like 6 days goes by and I hadn't caught a fish yet. So when I did, yeah, it was just, it really was like a release because I found myself, I wouldn't cry when I didn't get something apart from,
okay, Hank, it's okay, buddy. Go get her. Go on.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Go on.
I love seeing your Instagram updates about Hank, by the way, and his backpack.
Yeah, so to give it a little bit more context, it was, you know, 6 days after I had started fishing. And yeah, when I started crying, it was a release of that tension, mm-hmm. about of holding it in, like holding it together. Keep it together, Kylan, like don't give up. This will happen. Just keep going. And then when you get that prize, then you can let go of all of that tension that you were holding on to just for that, you know, brief moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I was describing being out there and your highs are like higher than any high you've ever experienced and your lows end up being lower than anything that you've experienced, I think it's just amplified because you literally are going meal to meal, you know, and if any one of us, any other nine of us had gotten a big game, like it just would have, it's understated how much of a game changer that is because you're looking at basically 100 days of food if you catch a big game, right? Whereas if you catch a rabbit, you're looking at 1 or 2 days of food. So yes, you get a brief moment of relief, but that tension is still always looming over your head. Like, this is great. I need more. You know what I mean? Like, you can be thankful. So when I got that fish and it was like that, I got two fish that day. And so they really did, like, I mean, that timeline was accurate where they were like, I caught my first fish. I gutted the first fish, used the guts on my hook. And within like 10 minutes, I caught my second fish. Mm-hmm. And so like to then have 10 days of food compared to the 1 or 2 days with rabbits was just, I mean, it was epic. I mean, mm-hmm. to be able to relax, you know, it's like a reset button. But unfortunately, at that point, I had already lost a lot of my fat reserves and, you know, I ended up, of course, losing those three fish, which probably would have taken me to the end, but it just was too little, too late.
Mm-hmm. You just mentioned a fat reserve. I'm super curious. Did you or other participants try and pack on as much as you could prior to September?
For sure. Yeah. So when we found out in like late June, we had 2 months to buy all our gear, get it ready. I made a lot of my clothing and gear. So it was go, go, go. But one of the biggest survival item that I thought that would be helpful was gaining weight. And man, what an experience that was. I was drinking olive oil. I went on like a ketogenic diet. So because that's very similar to what you would naturally find in the wild. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot of fish. And then I would do steamed vegetables. And then I had these like this keto shake, which is just like a, you know, like a protein powder is high in protein. Well, this keto powder is high in fat. And so I would do like a couple scoops of that with high fat yogurt, table cream or whipping cream and a half a cup of olive oil and then like a half a cup of peanut butter. And yeah, it was just like, oh man, it was the only way that I could get that many calories in me. Because of course it was the heat of summer. I ended up being able to gain 20 pounds, which was huge for me because, yeah, I mean, I'd never been that heavy in my life. And you can see in the pictures, my face is pretty round. But, you know, the funny thing is like, because it's what they call like extra fat, you lose it exponentially faster than you would like regular weight. I lost all of my extra weight in 20 days. But for me, I was like, well, that was 20 extra days that I gave myself, basically. So I would say it was a good choice.
Yeah, heck yeah. I'm just so curious about that in itself, though. When you've gained a bunch of weight, you have very nourishing food and some extra yummy treats on the side. And then you go to having to find your own food. I feel like because... I'm addicted to sugar. I would have such a hard time. And I recognize that you know, you prepped yourself with keto, but I feel like my own cravings or things that I would have become accustomed to would really hit my gut fast. Did you experience that?
So I quit coffee. I quit wine. I quit chocolate all a month before I left so that I would just get accustomed to the more like bland diet. And so I was trying to train myself not to have those cravings beforehand. Whereas some people, they struggled with the weight gain. And so a lot of times people were just trying to pack it on with carbs, like really heavy, you know, chips and pizza and beer and that kind of thing. And so you can get a, what's called a keto headache. And so when your body switches from being on a regular kind of balanced diet to more of a protein and fat diet, you can get these headaches because your brain isn't used to converting fat into energy. So I avoided the keto headache, which was really great. And I actually felt like I adjusted really well to that diet. My land offered quite a bit of blueberries and also cranberries. So I was able to have those yummy treats, you know, that were sugary and I had to get used to the cranberries because they were quite tart. But once that's all you've got, you know, you get used to them pretty quick.
You did mention chocolate a lot.
Yeah. And I probably mentioned chocolate like, oh, I don't know, 100 more times than they actually showed. Yeah. So my cravings, and I think it's across the board with a lot of the participants that the cravings end up being things that you're missing in your diet. So sugar, fat, you know, like I was craving my mom's Christmas baking like crazy to the point where I actually had this whole thing going where I was going to when I got home, I was going to open up a dessert food truck with my mom and it would be Sandra G's desserts. And I was like, no, it should be Sandra G's gourmet desserts. And, you know, like I was thinking about her Nanaimo bars and her chocolate covered cherries rolled in coconut and like, oh man, I was craving it hard. And then it turned, and I think they showed it where I was just kind of craving simple things, just like a cup of coffee with cream, you know, like that's just, you know, it's like throwing a croissant on the side.
Yeah, absolutely. What was your first meal back in civilization?
Well, fish. I wanted fish so bad because when I caught those fish, I could just feel the nourishment, like unbelievable compared to the rabbits. You know, I'd spent 56 days living off of rabbits, mushrooms, and berries. And having that first fish, I just immediately felt nourished, like to my bone. And so I just vowed to eat so much fish when I got home. And that was the first meal that I was just like, yes, like we need this. And we had a goose for Christmas. So I ended up being home just in time for Christmas, which was really nice. And Yeah, but they put you on a refeeding program, like at the lodge. After you finish, you go to the lodge and you start your refeeding plan. So they start you off really simply, and they feed you like bone broths and make sure you're getting rehydrated, and then they go into like simple things and breads and nuts and fruit and that kind of thing, and make sure that your digestion is going okay. And mm-hmm. and then by the end, then you're on to like steak and potatoes kind of thing, where they're mm-hmm. introducing you to kind of regular foods.
Mm-hmm. I'm so happy to hear that they do that. That's a really neat way to kind of reintegrate you, because my next question, I'm really interested in knowing about, like, so for 80 days, you had no conversations with anyone but your camera. There was no other person for interaction, for warmth, for a hug, for great conversation, laughs, nothing. No journal, no radio, no podcasts, no books, no nothing. Like that's why I think when it's called alone, people don't realize just how alone you can be. And mm-hmm. I'm super curious about kind of that culture shock or that reintegration back into a day-to-day. Did it feel loud? Did it feel too much? Was it overstimulating too much? Like, how was that?
Mm-hmm. I'm really lucky that I live in the bush. Mm-hmm. So coming home was like a really nice transition for me. Like, of course, the airport was a bit overwhelming, but once I got home, I found the hardest thing to reintegrate, because we were jumping right into our busiest season, was all of the multitasking. I was finding it really challenging, and I would get overwhelmed really quickly, because mm-hmm. out there, you had three things to do: food, firewood, and sleep, and, you know, water, of course. And so it was very simple. You knew exactly what you were going to do when you got up. You were going to go look for food and look for firewood. Mm-hmm. And then you were going to cook your food, and then you were going to chop your firewood. You know, it was like very, very, very simple. So when I got back, then there was emails and you know, I had to do food packing and gear checking and managing two staff that we had. And all of a sudden, my brain was supposed to be firing like normal, and it just wasn't. Mm-hmm. And that was really frustrating to me, because I finished the experience enlightened and energized and felt so powerful. I felt like I could do anything, right? And then I got home and I was like, what? Like, I can't. And so that was like really a struggle for me to come to terms with it, because I was like, well, and like, clearly I'm not. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just had to be patient with myself, and talking with past participants was really helpful, because they said, no, like, it took me a year to get back to normal, or like, it took, you know, I'm still working on it, and that kind of thing. So mm-hmm. I think the experience itself doesn't just last the 80 days that you were out there, or however long you were out there. It's a life-changing experience, and you have to figure out your new normal. Yeah, I mean, I do feel stronger today in what, like, I feel wiser. Like, I can see through surface anxiety or like worries, you know, where you like, you might otherwise get worried about something, but then just through your experience out there, you can just be like, ah, that's nothing, like, it'll be fine. Or mm-hmm. But my body is still recovering for sure. I've got like general aches and pains. I've been working out and trying to stay healthy, but I still, like, I think my recovery time is quite a bit longer. I still have these like aches in my back from, I think, just slouching over so much. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, my hair is flat, dry, and crispy. But yeah, overall, I mean, I feel really good about the experience, but mm-hmm. it's not just the 80 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's an incredible experience that very few people will actually be able to have. So what a gift.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was for sure. And I'm still learning.
What were the biggest takeaways or the biggest lessons that you've been able to bring forward into your business with Lure of the North?
Yeah, well, I think I'm still learning what those lessons are, because I think now that the show has just finished airing, I can try to get back to some normalcy. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the takeaways for me is being okay with pushing myself, pushing the business, pushing our schedule, because I know like we can do this, like we can do anything. And we do ambitious trips, you know, with participants. And I've never felt nervous about doing a trip, but at the same time, I also sometimes worry about all of the things that need to get done in order to make those trips happen. And mm-hmm. just not being afraid of like asking for help and getting help. And I don't know, like also just making sure that I'm doing what I want to be doing. And so if our business has like a certain aspect of it that I don't like, well, I'm going to change that, because life is too short to do something that you don't enjoy. And there's obviously some things that you have to do that you don't necessarily enjoy, like your taxes, the little tasks that you wouldn't otherwise enjoy, because life is too short to not enjoy what you're doing.
Oh gosh, yeah. I have a couple questions about your expedition. Can you tell me a little bit about that? Because I've seen some of the posts that you guys have been creating are really preparing for your next huge expedition. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, so we had done sections of this, the Missinaba River before. It connects James Bay to Lake Superior. So it was the historical fur traders route in Canada, linking the two bodies of water. And so we've done a few sections of it before, and when you look at the map of Ontario, you just see this perfect link between Superior and James Bay. Mm-hmm. And it just, to me, it's just so alluring. And so yeah, we've decided to try and do it all at once and get people to sign on with it.
Yeah, that is spectacular. What a way to connect with that area of land. Holy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really special place, and it's the only undammed river into James Bay anymore. So it's like a pretty special place.
Mm-hmm. So that's in 2022. And so will you have a cap on how many people you can actually bring for the whole journey?
Yeah, 10. So 10 plus Dave and I, so it'll be a group of 12.
Oh!
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, congrats. Yeah. That's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. We were going to be happy if we could just get like 4 people. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we're just like, yeah, and that would be a nice small group. But then it's like, okay, like this is happening. Good. Yeah. I'm excited. Really exciting. And yeah, we thought it would be pretty cool if we could film it and maybe make a documentary around it as well.
It's for in March.
So it's going to start in January of 2022. So not this coming winter, but right. Next winter.
Okay.
Because we figured we needed to give people time to like book off, you know, 90 days of their lives. Mm-hmm. So this coming season, we're doing like a regular season with, you know, 1 and 2 week trips. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be the January of 2022 that we start, and it will go into, I guess, April.
Mm-hmm. I cannot wait to see how that goes.
Yeah.
Hey, listeners. Sorry about the change in sound here. We really fought some internet connection issues with this call, which I'm hoping you haven't picked up yet, because if you haven't noticed that, it means that I'm doing very well with the production side of this podcast. I did, however, leave a real moment where Kylan and I reconnected on the phone. So here we go. Oh, you're the best. Thank you so much for that.
No problem. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. I just had a couple more questions for you that are kind of safe haven style.
Yep.
What are you most proud of?
I think the thing that I'm most proud of is probably continuously pushing through what I thought was my limit. Mm. I think I had hit my limit many times, or what I thought my limit was. And I continuously proved to myself that by just changing or tweaking my perception a little bit meant that I could continue on and, you know, live another day. And
And then also like enjoying it as well. So that was one of the biggest things, was like, I don't want to do this if it's just going to be a suffer fest, you know? And I managed to really, truly enjoy the experience. And I hope that came across in the show. I think they did focus on my emotions quite heavily because, well, I expressed them. But there are a lot of things that you missed too, of course. You're just seeing like a fraction of the experience. Mm. But yeah, I think I was most proud of just not giving up. And then I would have these like small victories and, you know, would realize like, yes, like I'm doing it, like let's keep going. And yeah, so just pushing through that sort of adversity and being able to change your perception of what actually is happening.
Mm-hmm. Was it hard to watch back?
Yeah, it was frustrating at first because every time I'd see myself cry, it's like, well, it didn't quite happen, you know, exactly like that, or mm-hmm. like they rushed it. And I mean, one of the most heartbreaking things for me was that they went from episode 10 ending on day 56 and then the last episode. So like my last 30 days were like three scenes. Mm-hmm. And so it was like frustrating because it was like they oversimplify things, right? With my whole tap out was just like, well, I'm out of food. My mind is my worst enemy and I'm going home. Mm-hmm. Like that's how I saw it. Mm-hmm. So that was really hard because obviously those last 30 days, I mean, it was freaking winter and like things were happening. Mm-hmm. But then when I got like all this amazing feedback from people, I'm just like, you know what? It doesn't matter that I think that they rushed my story because some people are touched by it. And so that's, you know, that's what matters. And, you know, I know the very fine, minute details of the whole thing and I can choose to share that with people or not. And that's my choice. Mm-hmm. But it will never change the experience that I had. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such a personal thing, right? No matter what they actually show or how they edit. And I was surprised too, actually, that when they said the finale, I'm like, wait a second, how do you wrap up 30 something days in 3 hours on TV between three people? That just did not. And especially too, because then they had the check-ins with you guys at the end that it kind of took away from that 3 hours. I was quite surprised by that too, actually.
Yeah.
And then watching it back, is there anything, or now knowing what you do, is there anything that you would do differently if given this opportunity again?
I probably wouldn't be so hard on myself. Mm. I think a lot of the things that I, you know, when I say like, I think, you know, you can be your own worst enemy, I think that's true in a lot of ways. And I was truly concerned that Dave was at home worried about how it should have, you know, it should have been him out on this experience. Mm. And I took it from him and I put a lot of pressure on myself to do really well for him, you know, to make him feel good about like, okay, like if I went home early, I felt like maybe he would have thought, well, if I had gone out, I would have done better. But like when I got home, or when I even just talked to him on the phone for the first time, he just like burst into tears. Aww. He was in hysteria. Like he just was like, I love you. I love you. I love you. Like, I just need you. Like, come home. Like, I need you. And it was the complete opposite of what I was thinking, what was going through his head. And so I think if I had a redo, I'd be a lot less hard on myself, and that might have made me miss home less, like not in a way that I, you know, obviously I would still miss them, but I mean like felt like I needed them and I needed to go home, or like just being so hard on myself. I think I would have been just more grateful for the experience, for every single day of what I had accomplished. And yeah, don't get me wrong, I was super grateful for every single day and every single rabbit and squirrel and fish But I think I just would have maybe been a little less hard on myself. Mm-hmm. Seeing each rabbit as a greater victory than being like, great, there's another rabbit. Now I need, 10 more.
Yeah, yeah. That's what another one of my girlfriends had said. When there was so much of a connection between you and Dave and beliefs or things that you had in your mind that were happening back home, missing him, all of these things. And then looking at the shared collection of skills that you and Dave have, is imagine the two of you out there together. Like, there's no question you could do forever.
Yeah. Yeah. I did say, people have asked me, oh, would you do it again? And I say, well, no, probably not. I probably don't need to be alone again like that. Like, mm-hmm. I honored the experience and I'm grateful for it. But I already knew that my biggest weakness would be like being alone. But if they did do a couple season, I think that Dave and I would kick butt.
Oh, yeah,
sure.
You would. Yeah. What do you want to be known for?
Well, I mean, I guess just the power of will and like tenacity of not giving up when things get hard. Mm. I consider myself a very average, regular person that can accomplish great things. Like a lot of people, like we get a lot of credit in our industry for being, leaders in the field and inspiration to people who want to like move off grid and get stuff done. And I'm honored to be in that position, but I also want people to know that I'm just a regular person that mm-hmm. can put their head down and just keep working. Like it didn't come from a trust fund. It didn't come from winning the lottery. Like it came from just work equity and just doing one step in front of the other. And I think that's what I showed, on Alone and in just our lives in general, is that you just have to keep going and not give up. And mm-hmm. when you hit a wall, either go around it or go over it or break through it. That's either way you got to get around it. So mm-hmm. I think that's a big message that I think I would like people to know, is that you can do anything. Just sometimes you might have to do it a different way or mm-hmm. or just figure out a different alternative altogether.
Mm-hmm. I love this. I've got one more that's a bit of a change up. How often do you create or check back with goals business-wise? Because you and Dave have a very quickly growing business. And is that something that you check back in with often as it grows and just kind of make sure that it's in alignment with your values and shared visions?
Constantly, yeah. We're constantly checking in. Readjusting, reevaluating what our business is doing. And I think it's really easy to do that because it's just Dave and I. Like, we have helpers and staff come in and out of the year, but because we live out in the bush, like having someone come and like live with us for 6 months is just like, it's a lot. So we try and just have like helpers come in and out. So when it's just the two of us doing every single task, you get really acquainted with what's working and what's not working. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I find we're always adjusting, and that's the best thing about owning your own business, is that you can truly follow your passion. There are times where you're doing something because, that specifically is a really good income maker for, that portion of your business. But that's just reality. Like, you can't live off of Cajun Sparkle like mm-hmm. Callie can if you want to run a successful business, which I freaking love. And if I had had more Cajun Sparkle, maybe I would have made it to day 90 as well.
That's so funny. I saw that whole Cajun Sparkle thing. She's so funny.
Yeah, it's adorable.
Mm-hmm. Where can people find you online?
We have our website, which is lurethenorth.com, and we are also on Facebook and Instagram and YouTube, all at Lure the North, L-U-R-E, of the North.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time today. I know that we had some technical difficulties and glitches in there, but your time means the world to me. Thank you so much for sharing.
You are very welcome. Thanks for having me.
I think you could hear the smile on my face when wrapping up that conversation with you, Kylan. Thank you so much for joining me on The Safe Haven. I cannot wait to chat with you again in the next few weeks and to hear all about you and your life outside of the TV show Alone. To everyone listening, I recognize the privilege that comes with my platform, and I am committed to creating a safe, brave, and inclusive space with intention. If this episode has hit you right in the heart or inspired you in any way, please screenshot the screen while you're listening, send it to all your friends, and share it in your Instagram stories. Be sure to tag us so that we can personally thank you for it. If you're able to write a review or leave a juicy 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, that helps this podcast really grow. For more great podcasts, check out frequencypodcastnetwork.com, and I will talk to you next week.